Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright on a lovely Wednesday morning here in New York. The NBA regular season finally kicked off last night, and the Warriors are already undefeated. How about that? Could Jason Garrett be getting a contract extension in Dallas? That is the question. But we start with the Giants, whose owner is not happy with Odell Beckham Jr.
Hey, Nick, aren't all the teams that don't lose undefeated?
I think that was the joke, Chris Carter.
Oh, okay. All right.
It went over your head.
Start off with a bang. Start off with a jug. Okay. We start this morning with the Giants' $95 million man who had a few emotional outbursts on the sideline during last Thursday's loss to the Eagles. That's combined with some questionable comments he made about his quarterback and criticism of the team's play calling. It was the final straw which prompted Giants owner John Mara to basically say, all right, enough is enough. Speaking to reporters, Mara said he wants Odell to stop talking and start focusing on just football.
I wish he would create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing, a little less talking.
CeCe, you know that this Giants organization, you have to sort of do a lot for John Mara to come out and call out one of their players. They're very protective of everyone. What was your reaction to what John Mara had to say?
Mr. Mara, he's right. He's correct. He's given Odell a warning. Now, they've given him plenty enough warnings because you're right to the fact that you have to do a lot of things for their family to be able to go. Now, they're at the owners' meeting, so now they have to speak on it. And they have to... He can't just blatantly just lie to people like, oh, yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy with our leader. I'm happy with the guy in the organization I invested the most money in. So, no, of course he's not happy because they want your star player to be an extension of the ownership and of the head coach. And the head coach has a 5-year contract. And they're expecting ownership. They're expecting Odell to support the head coach. Gettleman has a long-term contract. They're expecting Odell and his comments to support Gettleman in the decisions that he makes, even if you don't believe in him. Either tell him I won't have any comment about him, but you have to try to put a positive spin because when they pay you that kind of money, they're not paying you just for your performance. They're paying you for the image, for the branding. They're paying you for team leadership.
The whole package.
Sterling Shepard, Ingram the tight end, the influence you have on them. That's all a part of signing that contract. And when they decide to go with Eli Manning, regardless of how you feel, regardless of what the truth is, this is the problem. When you're on a team sport, the truth don't matter. Like, people don't want to. You don't need to tell the truth because you're inside the team. We're outside the team, so we can report on what the truth is. Eli Manning, at this point in his career, is not very good. He hadn't been good in a long, long time. That's my job. Your job, Nick's job. That is not OBJ's job because when you do that, you put yourself in conflict with the ownership, with the general manager, and with the head coach.
Is it fair to say, though, that that is the conversation the Giants don't want to have, which is why Odell and his interview with Josina Anderson is an easy scapegoat? Does everyone at the table agree that whether Odell does that interview or doesn't do that interview, the Giants are 1-5?
Sure.
Right? They were 1-4. They were 1-3 leading into that game. They've lost the 2 since then. They didn't lose the game in Carolina because of the interview. They didn't get blown out by Philly because of the interview.
Well, the owner did talk about he's not happy with Odell and he's not happy with the team. He said the team being 1-5 made him sick. So it wasn't as if he was trying to say Odell was the excuse. Now, people who do television shows and things like that, I'm not making an excuse. I'm just trying to tell you, when you signed up for that contract, you signed on for a lot of things that now it seems like all of a sudden you have forgotten.
Well, listen, I think that is a fair criticism. When he signed up for that contract, he signed up to be a leader. He signed up to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And obviously, that interview with Josina Anderson, even if, and I think you make a good point, even if the things he said in it were accurate, doesn't mean it's his position to say it. In fact, it's his position to say the opposite. You would say when he's asked, is Eli part of the problem, it's his job as a leader to lie. No, Eli's not part of the problem. Eli's part of the solution. Like, whatever it is, put a positive spin on it. When you take that
money, what did LeBron do last year with the Cavs and his teammates?
Right.
He blatantly just lied, 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 lied.
But in so doing, it helped the team. It helped its cohesiveness. It didn't bring any of their problems out.
We knew the
truth. Of course.
Of course.
But see, I'm not arguing with you on that. I'm saying after having talked to you about that for the last week, I have come around to your side of it that sometimes it is the job of a team leader to not tell the truth. I understand that part of it. The point I'm making is, while the owner says, yeah, I'm disappointed we're 1-5, Odell is an easy scapegoat here, and it's an easy way to have the focus of the issues with the Giants be about the diva, brash wide receiver, rather than how about the fact that they seem like they threw good money after bad with Nate Solder, that they were wrong in trusting Eli going into his year 15 season. All of those things are the bigger issues with the team. And we're talking about Odell's interview from 2 weeks ago that has nothing to do with their record. If anything, it's been...
It does have something to do with their record, because if they didn't have the internal team, he did apologize to his team. This was before he apologized before they got the 1-5. All right? So all these are part. All the things you named, they're part of the reasons why people would think, can the Giants recover? No, because it's too many real things. If it was just Odell, you'd been like, yeah, a team can overcome a guy's comments. But no, it's a lot of things. But one thing you can add to it is he is not being a positive leader. So you must add that to the pile of things where why their season potentially could be already over with in the middle of October.
It's on the table also that Odell maybe thinks that this is helping the team, that he's getting fired up, that he doesn't think there's enough emotion on this team, that he's the one that's going to say, okay, maybe you don't like the way I do it, but I'm going to be out there showing you that I want to win more than anyone else. Is that possible? That's what he's thinking?
Right. This is the thing. And Odell's just got to get over himself. Odell is very, very selfish. Most wide receivers are, myself included. So when you talk about people being selfish, I can identify it like a red nose on someone's face. And this is what this is about. When you're trying to talk about emotion, yes, he should be the emotional leader. But you got to lead that team emotionally for good. A lot of that emotion, too, is about look at me. It's about optics. This is not a game that requires some of the antics that he does, that he think he need to play the game. No, because I've seen him play his best football before he started doing all these things. Odell has evolved in. Let's go to the boat trip. All right. When he decided to take with a bunch of guys to go to Miami before the playoff game. What has Odell done on the football field since then? All right. Since he ain't part of the problem with the New York football Giants being 1-5, since then, have we seen the best football Odell can play, or have we seen a guy that we're talking about other things? And I would say that we're talking about a lot of other things.
Well, listen, a couple things. I don't think it's I didn't say he's not part of the problem. And I don't think anyone is saying you can't have your best player, your highest paid player, and the team's a disaster. Everyone is a part of the problem. The one guy who maybe is skirting on this and should is Saquon Barkley.
The other 52 guys were not doing interviews, though.
Right. See, that's why the interview is the only thing he's done that is part of the problem. His play, the one thing John Mara said that I thought was unfair is a little more playing. A little more playing, a little less talking. I don't think anyone can make the argument through six games of the season that even 1% of the Giants' problem has been Odell's play on the field. I understand he dropped that pass on fourth down. He muffed the punt. I get that. He hasn't played a perfect season. But their issue is not his play on the field. Their issue with him is the interview and the histrionics on the sideline.
The question is, what's our reaction to what the ownership said about the star player? All right? So we can sit here and blame this, blame that. It's not our fault that the owner is at the owner's meeting, comment about the guy. How much money did he give him, Jenna?
Right, almost $95 million. But you think John Mara wants to talk about Odell? You think John Mara wants to answer questions about Odell? John Mara would much rather talk about the fact that there's a lot of blame to go around.
No.
Jenna, he took a lot of criticism.
What do you think he'd rather do?
He took a lot of criticism for sticking with Odell and believing that there was going to be no more antics and this is the promise that Odell made, I'm going to be a team leader. That's the last thing he wanted to do. Is face a little crow and say he's got to be talking. Okay. He's got to do a little more football, a little less talking.
Of course he would rather be talking about the team being 5-1 than 1-5.
No, no, no.
But let me answer your question. Do I think John Mara would rather right now be able to lay this at the feet of Odell rather than lay it at the feet of Eli Manning deteriorating as a quarterback?
I don't think absolutely. That's
the two choices. That's not the argument here.
But that's the question Jen asked.
No, it isn't. It's not Eli or Odell. We're struggling as a team, or it's, hey, this is really Odell's fault. He went out of his way. This was Odell.
It's no different than anyone else getting an evaluation. We as employees, we get evaluated all the time. Are they happy with what you're doing? The guy that owns the business said, I'm not happy with what you're doing. And if Odell, if he's smart, he wouldn't listen to a whole bunch of people. He would listen to what the owner's saying because the owner holds his future. I wouldn't be listening to people outside of football who don't know what's going on. When my boss tells me, gives me a direct order to do something, that's what I would be about doing. And I wouldn't be about making a whole bunch of excuses about it.
All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this. We have Mark Schlereth joining us. We have Eric Mangini joining us. But coming up on the other side.
Coach Mangini is way different than me. I just know that. I know, man. Coach Mangini is all about the spice.
We'll talk some basketball coming up. Joel Embiid is already frustrated after losing to the Celtics in last night's opener. That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking the best fight songs in college football. So far, it is Michigan number one. It is Ohio State at number two. CeCe's been begging us all morning if he could sing it.
Get your alma mater jumped up the rankings over the rival.
I love the rankings there because those are all the schools except Duke that I thought about going to play football. Pittsburgh, Urschlacker, you're at the bottom there. Take five off, put Pittsburgh in there. Michigan, hail to the victors. Fight the team across the field. Show them Ohio's here. That was good.
You go.
Send your reverberating with the mighty cheer. Fight, fight, fight.
That's Michigan's.
No.
That's Ohio State's. Yes. That's Purdue?
Yeah.
It's Ohio State.
We're going to get to Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward.
You think he's going to sing the Michigan fight song on TV?
For one, Jenna, let me wait a second. Newsflash. Purdue, you got to have a fight song.
Poor Dusty went to Purdue.
He claims. Hit you right.
Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward in a minute. But first, Warriors and Thunder. NBA last night. Steph Curry leading the break. Shakes Raymond Felton before getting to the rim for a nice layup.
That's a big part of Steph Curry. People always talk about the three-pointers. It's lethal. But his ability to be healthy and get to the rim is reason why he's a special basketball player.
Listen, he is, once again last night he showed us, the most important player on that team. They go as he goes, man.
Sixers-Celtics, the earlier game, Jaylen Brown attacks the rim. Joel Embiid meets him at the rim. Brown muscles and wins the war at the rim.
I mean, did he win it?
Embiid
blocks it.
Yeah, he's got a lucky bounce.
Yeah. I mean, this is
basically a stalemate, but still 2 points.
Exactly right.
But Joel Embiid went to get this one, though. I like how both of them attacked it. Jaylen Brown wasn't backing down, and Joel Embiid didn't go after it one hand, went after it with two.
I love Jaylen Brown's on-court disposition.
A little better play for Embiid here. This time blocks Jaylen Brown, then alters the second shot. Simmons gets it on the fast break. Through the legs to Embiid for the dunk.
That was the apex of the night for the Philadelphia 76ers. Looked like maybe mounting a bit of a comeback. This was part of it, but then the Celtics
pulled away. That's the way Shaq
looked
before, like he gained another human being.
That's Orlando Shaq.
Yeah.
Even pre-Laker, even pre-MVP Shaq Orlando.
Yeah, he swallowed a small person with the Lakers and then got even bigger going to the Heat.
All right, sticking
with
the
Suns?
Sixers and Celtics, Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving both healthy again, but Jason Tatum was the story and the star for Boston last night, scored 23, grabbed 9 rebounds. Kind of a slow start for Boston at the get-go, but they pulled it together. They won 105-87. Boston has now won 10 straight home games against the Sixers. So, Joel Embiid, what do you think of this rivalry?
This is not a rivalry. I don't know our record against them, but it's pretty bad. They always kick our ass. So, this is not a rivalry.
Serving up a dose of reality, said Joel Embiid. What do you think about what Joel Embiid said?
I understand why you'd say that, and right now it's accurate. If we just go back over the last couple years, over last year to this year, the playoffs plus regular season, because we go back any further, that's when the Sixers were in full rebuild mode. The Sixers, since they've been a good team, since Embiid's been healthy, since they've had Ben Simmons, they're now 2-8 against the Boston Celtics. They lost in five in the playoffs. They lost three out of four in the regular season last year. And then last night, they were thoroughly outclassed in the NBA's first game of the season. So I understand why Embiid feels that way. The Celtics also have a guy in Al Horford that guards Embiid as well as any player in the league. It is a credit to Horford because Horford's about four and a half inches shorter than Embiid. Embiid's a better athlete than him. Embiid is stronger than he is. But Al Horford has always given Joel Embiid fits. And so last night you saw that. You also saw one team that can send waves at you. And the Sixers team, as I said yesterday, even though I'm very high on them, they are a thin team. They are a starting five and a couple possibles. The Celtics have two legitimate starting fives, and that was a big part. That's why they can overcome Kyrie last night, no showing, and still win this game going away.
Yeah, the Celtics, this is who the Celtics are going to be. Any given night, they have so many paths to victory. That's what I saw. And Nick pointed out the lack of depth the 76ers going to have. Markelle Fultz, what is his actual potential now? Saw him start the game. Brett Brown, the coach there, that said, man, we believe in him. He's better as a starter. And all of a sudden, they come in the second half. He only plays 3 minutes in the second half. Didn't start in the third quarter. So for me, they already have huge question marks going forward. Now, Nick showed me one time this offseason where Ben Simmons was shooting jump shots, but obviously didn't have a whole bunch of makes in there because he's still going to struggle. He's a phenomenal basketball player, but his inability to be able to shoot the ball from range, it crowds the court. Him and Markelle Fultz on the court at the same time,
it's
now
so
people
congested.
Can slough off. They're in the lane, and it stunts the growth for them offensively. So Boston, who do they have on any given night can be a superstar? One of probably five or six players. When you have two of your starters only contribute in Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, they can contribute 16 points.
And Gordon Hayward only gave you 10?
Yeah, and I'm just saying, those two right there didn't score in double figures. At least Gordon scored in double figures.
Right.
There's so many more ways that they can win. And they have one of the best coaches, if not the best basketball coach, as far as timeout, individual possessions in Brad Stevens. So I think the Celtics, outside of the Warriors, this is not because they played one game. This is what I thought going into the season.
Yeah.
And as we go through the season, I believe it plays out that Boston is the second best team in the NBA.
We talked coming into this game about, we call them rich problems that Brad Stevens had. Shot distribution among Tatum and Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. And maybe the first game didn't quite shake out. Hayward hasn't played in a long time. Kyrie also coming off an injury. But how does Brad Stevens handle that? I mean, you saw that clearly Tatum is
not lost a step. You got a superstar in Jason Tatum.
You
got a superstar in Jason Tatum. And if people need to adjust their eyes and his teammates need to adjust accordingly. Kyrie's never played on a team like this. Kyrie's never played on a team with this hot much talent. Even those Cavs teams that went to the finals, they had the best player in the world. Kyrie was a clear number two, and then a third option in Kevin Love.
Right. They had three all-stars, but they didn't have the overall depth. After Kevin Love, it was a serious drop-off.
And those Cavs teams weren't running plays for Kevin Love. So on possessions that LeBron wanted to rest and stand in the corner, they were totally fine with Kyrie. Dribble, 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 and do your thing. That's not going to be a big part of the Celtics offense. That's not the best way for them to move forward. Now, Kyrie's not going to go 2-of-14. He might not go 2-of-14 again all season. But it is going to be an adjustment for him. I think it is, like you said, rich people problems. See, to your point about the Sixers, man, they looked like a team that hadn't worked on one offensive set all offseason. Now, that defense is going to carry them to 50 wins alone. They will be, these two teams might be the two best defenses in the league by the end of the year. I'm certain Philly's going to be a top three defense. But offensively, they are so congested. They are, and Markelle Fultz, I mean, he played 21 minutes, in the first half? And 3 minutes in the second half, Markelle Fultz is a problem and not in a good way right now. And when you only have a 7-man rotation, particularly until Wilson Chandler comes back, if Markelle Fultz looks anything like he did last night moving forward, they have a big gaping hole in their roster because they need him to be their big offseason acquisition, essentially.
Yeah. Now, I thought they made a mistake by only playing him 3 minutes and not starting him in the third quarter. I didn't think he played that bad in the first half. I think he took a couple good shots in the lane. You could see he elevated one time. You see he's worked out some of the kinks as far as his jump shot. But the only way you get confidence shooting jump shots is in-game action. And the longer they go between relying on their perimeter game, the more problems you're going to see. So for me, I thought that was a mistake by not playing him or even playing him those limited 3 minutes the second half.
How did Ben Simmons do last night outside of 21 feet?
Ben Simmons outside of 21 feet did not make a shot. More on that later in the show. I want the audience to know something, though, about C and Ben Simmons. C is not, if Ben Simmons learns to shoot, what do you think his ceiling is?
Oh, he can be the best player in the world.
Okay. So I think people think that C's down on Ben Simmons.
You put learning to shoot as if it's like, oh, as long as he just learns to shoot, it's not easy.
Well, this is the thing. He's got size, power, and speed that's rare, a lot like LeBron. But we're in a day and age where guys can shoot so much. It's only thing stopping him. He's still an NBA All-Star, even if he can't shoot beyond 12 feet.
That's what I wanted the audience to hear C say. I think because C was a big Donovan Mitchell guy last year, and he gives Ben Simmons and me, by proxy, a hard time at him not being able to shoot, that he thinks Ben Simmons is some average player. If he never learns to shoot, he's a multi-time All-Star.
Yeah, and he's an elite defender. No. Absolutely. He can be on my team, but I'm going to lock him in the gym because that's where you find the jump shot at.
All right, time now for your player resume, sponsored by Indeed, the world's number one job site. Game four of the NLCS between the Dodgers and Brewers last night. This was a marathon that ended literally as I was waking up this morning, as Cody Bellinger hit a walk-off single to bring home Manny Machado in the bottom of the 13th. Dodgers go on to win 2-1 to even the series through four games. Nick, this was... First of all, this game was never going to end. It was quite a way for it to end.
I mean, it's one thing for a game to go this long, but a 1-1 game to go on this long, that for the Dodgers, in my mind, is a must win. The Brewers had been so hot going into the playoffs, played so well in the first round. If they go 3-1, then the only drama left in the series is it going to go 5 or is it going to go 6? Now the Dodgers have a real shot with Kershaw on the mound tonight, a chance for Kershaw to redeem himself from his game 1 performance. What a game last
night. It was awesome to see the Dodgers respond to the pressure, because this was pressure-packed, must-win situation, not a lot of runs, not a lot of hits, not a lot of guys on base. So typically the Dodgers of late, they haven't responded to that pressure. Last night they get the hit in the 13th to be able to get the win. Huge wins for Dodger Town.
All right, series all tied up at 2 games apiece. Coming up, should the Dallas Cowboys consider keeping Jason Garrett long-term?
Yeah,
that is next up.
We out here giving out...
Back here, first things first, 3-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth joins the show. What's up, Mark?
How are you guys?
Good.
It's good to be with you guys,
as
always.
Oh, you have such a good week when you're here.
It's good to see you, Mark.
Likewise, my friend.
All right. I got an assignment for you after the show, dog.
Okay. All right.
Go over to Jim's house, change the light bulbs.
Okay, that was an inside joke that is still inside.
Jim pays people to change your light bulbs because she don't know
how. Because that's nice.
I will take a polygraph to that effect.
That is the nice thing to do. I don't expect things. I just, you know. Cowboys are 3-3 on the season. It's gone like this. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. About as up and down as Nick's funny lines. Similar to the faith fans seem to have in head coach Jason Garrett. Boom. Seemingly on the hot seat following every loss this season, rumors were that Garrett might be getting a contract extension to remain in Dallas. However, Jerry Jones refuted that report. But what do you think, Stink? Should the Cowboys still be considering giving Jason Garrett an extension?
Well, why not? Why wouldn't you give him an extension? I mean, you've never empowered him. You're not going to empower the next guy. You're not going to empower the guy after that. So why not just give that guy an extension? He does what you want him to do, right? I mean, he orchestrates the team like you want him to orchestrate the team.
He's doing like, exactly.
Unless you're willing as the owner / general manager to actually empower a guy to do his job without a back staircase up to your office that you can circumvent that guy, you're not going to have success in Dallas. So give him an extension.
What does Jason Garrett, what does he do?
Great question. That's a great question. I don't know.
He manages the Dallas Cowboys football club for Jerry Jones and his son, Steven. Steven and them, they pick the players. You're not going to risk too much with Jason because he is a Cowboy. He played his career there. Jerry feels like he can trust him. And I feels like Jerry can meddle as much as he wants to because Jason's only going to say so much. Last year, they changed some of the coaches. Star players, Jason Witten and Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant was a decision that Jerry and the staff decided we're not going to have it. Witten caught them off guard. So now they're still suffering from that. But from a football standpoint, when you talk about the players they've picked outside the wide receiver position, you can say they've done a good job. So unless Jason, as Jason Garrett is picking the players, then he should stay there. Because they got good football players, except their wide receiving room, where they need one guy who could be the go-to wide receiver.
I agree they've drafted well. What they haven't done a good job of, and what they haven't done well, is the hard decisions about, of these good players we've drafted, who do we keep? And that's why they are all perpetually in some type of salary cap hell. They're perpetually borrowing from Peter, borrowing from the 2020 cap to help the 2018 cap. Like, that's why you can be a team that has so little money.
So their salary cap, that's not their problem right now. I mean, for the last 20 years, Dallas Cowboys have been an average football team.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of blame to be able to go around. All right. When Tony Romo got hurt, they did not have a competent backup that could get them through that stretch when I thought they were the best team that they put on the field, absent of the one they put out there 2 years ago. The salary cap, if you draft good players and it just happens that their offense or defensive line, when you sign those players to their second contract, it's because they're the best players on your team. Tony Romo was off into retirement. They had to invest. Zeke and them were still on their first contract. Who were they going to invest in? Who are they going to put that $172 million into? They had to put it into the draft capital that they already had and the best players, not only on their team, but these are the best players in the NFL. Tyron, at tackle, you got to keep him. The center, you got to keep him. Unfortunately, you know, he's got the autoimmune thing going on. But Zach Martin.
And DeMarcus Lawrence.
All these guys earn that money. So they're not having problems because of the salary cap. I mean, they're having problems because...
Well, are they losing because of Jason Garrett? Can you look at games they've played this season or last season and say, well, these are the games that he did not manage the right way, did not coach the right way?
I think he's the definition of a league average coach. I don't think he is, to use a baseball term, his value over replacement coach is 0.0. Now, you can have a negative value. You can be worse than the replacement level coach. I don't think he is help. I don't think he's a force divider or a force multiplier. The problem with that is you're the Dallas Cowboys. If your head coach position's available, it should be one of the 10 most sought-after jobs in all of sports.
Okay, let's do this.
Well, perception becomes reality. And if in a locker room the perception is, my coach hasn't been empowered, when things go sideways, you know what you do? You go, it's Jason Garrett. I mean, what's he going to do? Who cares? I mean, and you know what? We're children. Like,
as football players.
Yeah, as football players. It's, at times, you know, you need to be managed, and you need to have a strong voice, and you need to have somebody that you know is in power. When was the last time they won anything? Jimmy Johnson. Who was in charge of that team? Jimmy Johnson. There was no question who was in charge of that team. Why did Jimmy Johnson get fired? Because Jerry Jones wanted to be in charge of that team, and he wasn't. And since that point, who have you empowered? You didn't empower Bill Parcells.
Nope, that's why Bill left.
You didn't empower Bill Parcells. You circumvented his authority because you brought in T.O. and he said no to it. So, I mean, like,
and the thing
who
about
power?
It, even if you decide this, okay, you are the Dallas Cowboys, let's just work the whole thought out. You decide to get rid of Jason. I like Jason. I believe he does a good job, especially based on the parameters he's got to work with Jerry. Who are you going to hire? Who you think's going to take that job? Because it's well known who's going to be running that team. It's not like David Shaw was getting ready to leave.
Well, that's who I was going to say.
Oh, no. You think I'm getting ready to leave Stanford? I read an interview with David Shaw, and he said, listen, anytime anyone calls me, I tell them to call my wife first. And she is not trying to leave the setting of that college campus, the beautiful backdrop of Stanford, to try to come to work for Jerry Jones.
What about Lincoln Riley? He's already in Texas. He's already in the area. Pardon me. He's at Oklahoma. He's almost the flavor of the month in college football. And you have seen what he can do with Baker. Now what he can do with Kyler Murray, a team that needs more, let's call it, creativity on offense. You don't think he would?
He's got one of the top five jobs in college. Why leave college to work for Jerry Jones? I'd much rather work with the president and athletic director at Oklahoma. It's been a smooth transition from a legend in Stoops Man, I got talent coming there. I got a top 10 recruiting class every year. The winning standards at Oklahoma and trying to manage Jerry Jones's team, they're totally different. Why would I take that opportunity? Like, I don't think Lincoln Riley is the next Sean McVay, because Sean McVay is born and bred in the NFL. He has what the NFL takes. He's not just some young, bright play caller and everything. Like, his system is built for NFL, and the way he runs his team is built for NFL players.
Oklahoma has, you know, more money than they know what to do with. They've got the facilities. They recruit themselves. I mean, as a head coach, college football, you know you're going to, in that division where they don't play defense, and you're going to have the best athletes on the football team. If you play 11 games, 10 times, you're going to have the best athletes on the football. You're going to win a lot of games.
So like, then am I overstating what a good job this is? Because of the Jerry Jones factor of it, because you are never going to be fully empowered, when I say it's one of the best jobs, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, one of the best jobs in all of sports, am I just wrong on that?
Prove it to me.
Yeah, I think you're wrong. Yes. I think
it's a name only.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, I think I had this conversation. I went and watched film with Mike Shanahan the other day, and we spent 3 hours just watching film. Like, he's just teaching me stuff, concepts and whatnot. And I've had this conversation with him in the past. And we've had this conversation. There's 8, 10, 12 franchises, maybe,
yes,
that want to win a championship. Yep. That's what they're
fully invested.
Fully invested in winning a championship. Some guys just, like, if it happens, that'd be great. But I'm watching my franchise just build in value year in, year out, year in, year out, year in, year out. And as long as we're competitive, we're good.
But aren't the Cowboys one of those 10, 12 franchises?
Not unless your owner is willing to fully empower a head coach. No, you're not. Like, if you're a head coach and you have...
If he was willing to do that, he swallowed his pride, make his team better today. Swallow his pride and re-sign Dez Bryant.
Okay, let me ask you this. From an ownership standpoint, if two jobs became available... Pittsburgh and Dallas.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, just it's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, but yes. Pittsburgh might be the
Denver. Wait. You know, well, the ownership is different right now, so maybe I won't go there.
But for the last 30 years,
yeah.
Denver.
Denver with Pat Bowlen when he was
yes.
in charge.
And their fan base,
Pat
that Bowlen stadium. Yes.
And Dallas. The Denver Broncos. More Super Bowl trips than losing seasons in the last 30.
Yeah, and hadn't had back-to-back losing seasons
right.
in 40 years. No, I guess maybe – so is the key to this if – because Jerry Jones famously a month ago said, I would pay an offensive amount of money to win a championship. Is the best thing for the Cowboys to have a chance to win a championship, not tweaking Dak, not correcting Jason Garrett, is the best thing if Jerry Jones really wanted that? For him to take a step back, for him to say,
now
I'm going to be...
Now you're talking about something that's impossible.
Never going to happen.
Never going to happen. Zero chance. Zero chance.
Even
better chance
that,
than if you're trying to make me disappear.
Okay.
Bob, ain't going to happen.
I got to take a break. Coming up, we'll talk some Patriots. Can Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski play forever? Brady seems to think so. That's next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football returns tomorrow as Von Miller and the Broncos battle Josh Rosen and the Cardinals. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Bradley Chubb, his breakout game last week, right, Stink?
He had a great game. Of course, that's what happens when you play him at defensive end instead of outside linebacker.
Oh. Lareth is here with us for Stories to Start Your Morning, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Warriors got their championship rings last night for their third title in 4 years. Reversible rings, whatever that means. Then they proceeded to pick up where they left off last season. Curry with 32, KD with 27. Warriors beat the Thunder 108-100. Nick Wright, how did the Warriors look last night to you?
They looked fine. The story was Steph Curry, who looked more than fine. This guy is such a remarkable basketball player. As talented as that team is, when he was off the court last night, -7. When he's on the court, +15. He's not the straw in the drink. He is the drink for them, even though they have Kevin Durant.
The story last night was them getting their rings and everything, of course, from the repeat. But I thought part of the story was the Thunder. The Thunder looked nice. Took a lead late in the third quarter without Russ and other key players.
Two-point game with 2 minutes left.
I just want to know what the reversible ring is. Is that like race cars, the same forward and backward? How does it work? I want to know.
Gordon Hayward made his return to the court for the Celtics, taking on the Sixers. Hayward had 10 points, 5 rebounds in 25 minutes. Said it was thrilling to be back out there on the court. See, how big of a contribution can Hayward make this season once he gets into the groove of playing again?
Man, if he forgets about trying to be the number one player, shoot, he's the perfect role player for a young emerging Jason Tatum as a superstar, Kyrie as a superstar. Yes, I believe that, yeah, without an ego, I believe he's the perfect fit. And he's going to be part of the glue. If they're going to get close to the Warriors, it's going to be because him and players coming off that bench.
In today's NBA of super teams, if Gordon Hayward is your third best player, you are in tremendous shape. And that's what I think he's going to be this year. I think Tatum and Kyrie are going to jostle for the top spot, and Hayward's your third best guy.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. Tough going for the Buffalo Bills. Quarterback Josh Allen could be out for multiple weeks with an elbow injury. Reports are now that the Bills could lose the locker room if their backup Nate Peterman starts again. And that would force the Bills to turn to Derek Anderson. All right, Stink, who should the Bills start
Derek
at
Anderson.
Did Jimmy just say Derek Anderson stinks?
Yeah,
she was tossing at the stink. Oh,
I'll tell you what, you guys haven't won. Well, they went to the playoffs last year, but then they got rid of their playoff quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, that's an organizational issue. How about we got thumb pullers instead of finger pointers? I mean, you got a locker room full of finger. I admit it. It's his fault. It's his fault. Well, point the thumb at yourself and actually go out and play. How about that?
In their defense, in the players' defense,
okay,
they are playing for a coach who, in the midst of their run to the playoffs last year, said, Nate Peterman, this guy, you guys haven't seen him play yet, but we got this young quarterback who gives us a better chance to win than Tyrod Taylor. So they benched their quarterback in the midst of the playoff run for Nate Peterman.
Right.
Nate Peterman is now off to the worst start in NFL history. So I don't blame the players for saying, man, you trot out number two again, I'm done.
You got to have a locker room to lose a locker room. Hey, man, if you play someone in this locker room, I'm not going to play no more. That's how tight the locker room
right,
is.
Yeah.
The guy I'm throwing under the bus is in the locker room.
Right.
Oh, excuse me.
All right, finally, in this week's episode of John Gruden Says Stuff, the Raiders head coach had some interesting comments about how, quote, we aren't taking anything, and how he actually does like rookie players despite what America thinks. His words, not mine. And the topper, Gruden had this to say about his quarterback.
Look, the results, you know, they need to improve. I know that. But he's the strength of this football team, and we're going to get him to play better. It goes on. He's on my watch. I said it when I got here. If he doesn't play well, I failed. You know, this guy's a good player that can be great. And we got to protect him better so we can really see what he can do.
All right, Stink.
With the conviction of a man
I'm
that really
you.
Believes his work.
What is going on in Oakland right now? Really? We haven't really spoken to you about it.
I'm telling you, he can
be
great.
And all of it.
Right. Obviously it's a mess. You came in, you inherited the oldest team in football. You got rid of the best pass rusher in football for whatever reason you decided to do that. You know, the best outside rusher. And, you know, and honestly, having done a Chicago game, one of the best people in the National Football League.
And that was one of the tragedies with this. Like, this holdout, lack of communication with, I mean, the guy that goes to Buffalo, not the Bills, the University of Buffalo,
right,
is a great college player. You draft him. You do all the background. He's got great character. He is a great pro. He's great in your locker room. And we can't even talk?
Right.
Like, To me, you're missing out on a lot of things that make NFL right. teams or sports teams go, and that communication right. and trust factor.
The Bears are like, this guy has changed our football team. He has changed the character of our football team. He has changed the chemistry of our football team. He walked in, and we were better. I mean, he has literally changed, and they had a good defense going in. Like he has literally changed their football team. Like, we all are trying to find chemistry, and we're trying to create a culture. He walked in and changed the culture of the football team, and how you can't have that guy on your team.
But what Gruden is able to say on that, and listen, I agree 100% with you that you don't trade Khalil Mack. You don't trade Hall of Fame players in their prime. But Gruden is in the position to say, listen, we can't judge that trade until we see what we get back from that trade. We didn't trade him for players today. We traded him for two future picks, so wait on that. But the one thing Gruden has tied himself to is the quarterback. See, what did he say he took the job because of?
Because we had a great quarterback. I'm here because of you.
And he just said yesterday, he reminded everyone, I said that if he's not great, it's on me. I have failed. And that is the part that is, I don't blame John Gruden. There's a lot I blame John Gruden for. I do not blame John Gruden for Derek Carr being who I think Derek Carr's been most of his career. A dinker and dunker who had one great season. A guy who likes to throw the ball right around the line of scrimmage, doesn't take shots downfield, hasn't been able to take advantage of Amari Cooper. That too, number four, has always been to me. So I don't put that on Gruden. But what I do put on Gruden is the lack of continuity of message. Because if you think your quarterback can be great, you do not enter in, you don't trade Khalil Mack and enter into an optional rebuild when you have a franchise quarterback who is in the heart of his prime, who has a new contract extension that just kicked in last year. That's the part of this that doesn't make sense. The only way Gruden's tenure thus far with the Raiders makes sense is if he thinks the quarterback's not any good and he thinks we have to rebuild everything. We have to draft a quarterback. That's why we need those picks. That's the only way this makes sense.
All right, let's move on to the New England Patriots now, who are currently Vegas's favorite to win the Super Bowl. So basically, nothing new. Brady struggled to find Rob Gronkowski in Sunday night's win for most of the game, but when it counted, he found him twice, including the 39-yard play to set up the game-winning field goal. How much longer can these two keep doing that? In their own words, a long, long time. There's Brady. We can play forever. We're doing this forever. CeCe, what was your reaction to what Tom had to say?
Gronk didn't say yeah. Gronk didn't say yeah. Sometimes, you know, you have moments of euphoria. We all do. You just say things you think they just in your face. Oh, my God. Like, oh, we could just do this forever. But the reality is that euphoria wears off. Yeah. And, no, they can't play forever. They do enjoy playing. And Stink could tell you right now. Him and I would go back to playing in the National Football League if our bodies were healthy enough and all we had to do was play on Sunday Night Football. All we had to do was play in big games. We didn't have to practice. We didn't have to go to meeting with those little young guys talking about stupid stuff. We didn't have to study it under defense for the millionth time, cover two, like for the millionth time. Yeah, we would all do it, but that's not the reality. You got to come in on Monday and your body's sore. On Tuesday, sometimes you can't feel like you got to walk. You go out in the community and try to do stuff. Wednesday, hardest day of the week. As a veteran player, coach, if he love you, which Belichick don't love none of his players, he'll come in and say, hey, man, you take the day, take it light today. For the veteran players, Wednesday can be an easier day for them. But no, we're not going to be able to show up like that. So we can't play. And Brady's not going to be able to play. He's already playing with house money. And Gronk is a realist. Gronk tried to quit this offseason. So Gronk's body does not feel like Tom Brady's body and the way they're changing the rules.
Right.
Why would Tom Brady have to quit? They cannot hit you. Gronk, they can hit you every place right now.
And they
do. Don't want to be it. Gronk would be like, hit me in my head. I'm fine with that. But no, they're not going to do that. So the games are totally different for these two players.
Yeah, it's we could play forever. Wait. You moved to tight end, then tell me. You can play for move to offensive line and tell me you can play forever. Like, you're right. The rules are all bent toward the quarterback never getting touched. You know, I mean, eventually they're going to put them in pink jerseys in the game, just like they are in pink jerseys at practice.
Yeah, well, the month of October and everything, breast cancer awareness. Right. So they're wearing pink.
Yeah, they
for
say
other causes very, very
right,
strong.
Yes, exactly.
But ultimately, we're going to put them in a different color jersey. Okay.
They will always start red, but by the end of the season, they'd be washed enough that the jerseys would be pink. That's how you get pink jerseys.
How you guys were going to get there.
Okay. Yes, that's how they get the pink jerseys. But yeah, it's a completely different. Game that he's playing,
yes.
And he's 100% right. He is, and he said this before, man, I got all the answers to the test. The game for him is so easy, and the rules have made it even easier for average quarterbacks to compile statistics. Why would he ever walk away?
Every rule they've made has made it more likely that Tom Brady's body feels better after a game.
Yes.
And less likely that Gronk's does. Because what you said, while long-term health, I'm glad they're protecting the player's head, obviously that's important. But Gronk's issues are with his elbow, with his knee, with his back. The place is now that he gets hit every single time. The game has not gotten safer for Gronk at all. If anything, because there is more of an incentive to pass, it's gotten more dangerous or more more physically imposing for Gronk. His body feels worse. Like, there's...
What happened when they changed the rules, the probability of someone seriously injuring one of his knee, the probability went
skyrocketed.
Way up because they moved the target down to his legs, which could end his career just like that.
Also, Gronk needs Brady much more than Brady needs Gronk in this relationship for either of them to be successful out on the field, wouldn't you say?
Well,
Brady has done it with a myriad of different players, and yeah, but Gronk is.
But I don't think Gronk is anybody.
Gronk is a special. He's a special case. He is one of those guys because he's a guy that could be in your backfield. He could be in line. He's a blocker, front side, back side. He does all those things exceptionally well. He can be in the slot. He can be outside the numbers. So he's such an incredible matchup guy, and he's so hard. Anytime he break the huddle, you got to have a plan. How are we dealing with 87? There's very few people in football where you look at a guy that breaks the huddle and go, okay, that guy, how are we going to contend with him? Where are we going to get a double team on him? How are we going to stop him from hurting us?
If you give Tom Brady one player throughout his career, I can guarantee you he does not pick the Hall of Famer first ballot Randy Moss. All right? That would be his second choice. Rob Gronkowski would be his first choice. The number one, it would not be Nate Solder. And matter of fact, between him and Belichick, man, if they had extended Gronk, if he had played longer with Brady, man, he would be up there fighting. That's his guy. And you could see in the game, in the most critical moment, where do I go with the football? Yeah, I know coverage dictated he was going to get it, but who do I trust?
And that's been the case the fourth and something against the Broncos in the AFC Championship game a few years ago. Gronk. The three biggest plays of the game last year, their biggest game of the year against the Steelers. Gronk. The two biggest plays against the Chiefs. Gronk. Like, he knows.
This is the thing. When he went to Gronk, everyone had man-to-man. So I had a choice. I can go to the left. I can go to Josh. I can go to Edelman. I can go to Gronk. I can go to Hogan outside. I'm going to go. All of them had the same matchup. But I decided to go to because I trust this guy. And with Tom Brady, it's about trust and it's about performance. And no one has done it better for him than Gronk.
All right. Stick around. Coming up, who is the real distraction for the Giants? That's next on First Things First. Jackie Bradley Jr.'s grand slam cemented the Red Sox win over the Astros last night. And with the Sox taking a 2-1 lead in the ALCS, no one was happier than David Ortiz on the set of the MLB FS1 postgame show.
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah! Oh, sexy! Oh, sexy! Yeah! Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Oh! 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 Come on, baby! Come on, baby! That's what I'm talking about! Come on, bro! 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 I told you, bro!
Oh, my God.
He almost lost the watch.
The clock on his hand almost fell off.
I love that, dude. When my son was pitching for the Tigers, I was at a game early. Big Poppy comes over to me. I'm just watching BP. Drags me into the Red Sox dugout. And spoke to me for about 20 minutes. I didn't understand all of it because it was like broken. But he's like 20, like he was my father. He was coaching me up on, it was one of my greatest sports moments in the Red Sox.
That's awesome.
He is so passionate. I love Big Bobby, man.
He loves his Red Sox.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Good for him.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with that.
Really
he's a
cool.
fan. Hey,
really cool. And that is the best postgame show in sports right now. Our postseason postgame show, it's so well done. And Poppy's a huge part of it.
No, it's what goes on behind the scenes. Like, we're fans just like anybody else. We get excited. All right, it hasn't been the smoothest of starts for Odell Beckham Jr., both on and off the field. His criticism of his quarterback and the team's play calling was followed up with a number of emotional outbursts on the sideline of last Thursday's loss to the Eagles. All that and just one touchdown this year. It was the final straw which prompted Giants owner John Mara to basically say, enough is enough.
I wish he would create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing, a little less talking.
Art Sneak, what was your reaction to John Mara's comments?
Well, I think John Mara is right. And just from the standpoint of understanding what it takes to be a champion, what it takes to be great in this sport, we have to all understand that we are all interconnected. you can't have success if I'm not doing my job. Like, we're all dependent on one another. This is the ultimate team sport.
Yeah, that's why they gave me 2 draft picks. I snatched him and Mangini.
Right.
I work with them. Let's do this. Okay, bring them to our show.
Right, exactly. Yes. But we're all dependent on one another as a football team. And, you know, my belief is that character drives talent towards greatness. It's never the other way around. Talent doesn't drive character. Character drives the talent toward the greatness. And you have got to have football character. You have got to understand that I am sacrificing, I am doing this for the other guys, and I have to understand that the other guy, 10 guys, if they don't do their job effectively, I am never going to touch a football. And so until you come to that realization and you're willing to lay it on the line for your teammates and to do what's right for your teammates, you are, I don't care how you are, you'll never have the kind of success that you want to have. And the lack of emotional maturity has been the issue. And I heard you earlier on the show saying, yeah, what has he done since he was great, since the boat trip, since, you know, with all these emotional outbursts, I don't remember him being a factor since that time. I don't remember him being a difference maker since that time, except for, look at what he's doing. He's, you know, acting, peeing on the field, you know, but, you know, those are the things that...
Well, we're not going to hold the broken leg against him, right?
No.
I mean, because one of the reasons he hasn't done much since the boat trip is last year he missed the vast majority of the year because of a broken ankle. When he did play last year, he was excellent. I mean, I just, again, I'm not making an excuse for him, but I want to make sure we have a fair record of what happened.
How many games did he play last year?
I think 4.5.
Oh, okay.
And 3 touchdowns.
So it's just been a long time since we've seen him, which what the owner is saying, I pay him money for what? To play.
To play, right.
So last year he was actually hurt, and this year we thought that, oh, the Giants are bad because Odell's hurt. Oh, the Giants are bad now and Odell is healthy. So I'm paying you this money so that we are a good football team. They don't pay players just so they can play and just have the product out there. They're being paid so they can win. So I thought that's what the Giants owner was also trying to address, which he was forced to do at the owners' meeting yesterday.
Listen, I understand that the interview he did, it brought him into this news cycle. He had kept quiet. He hadn't had a sideline outburst. I had said the week before, I said to you, Jen, I think off the air, I said, Odell's gurgling. You saw it for a moment, like the frustration, and I was wondering what was going to happen. Now, I didn't know he was going to sit down with Josina and air out the team, and I came on TV the next day and said, there's no lies there. And C made the point, doesn't matter if there's no lies there. It's his job to lie in that spot. Mm-hmm.
Or to not say things like, I don't know if I'm fully committed to New York. I could see myself playing in other places.
Well,
like,
he didn't say that.
But you don't want to make why say anything?
He didn't
anything
give the type of impression when you give someone $90 million
that you want to...
That's
going to happen. You got to get that money in this city. There's a reason why Michael Strahan is who he is and Tiki Barber is who he is. It's just not what they did on the field. It's actually what they said and the kind of leadership that they provided and the consistency. That's the reason why Michael Strahan is. The only person that would have that opportunity is someone like Odell Beckham. So for me, this is just not all football related. This is about the image of the player and the branding that the player said that he's about. I believe he's hurting his own brand.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. I think that sometimes you get confused. Like, the branding happens when you're great on the football field. That's when the true, like, that's...
But don't you think that's part of his frustration? Because I just want to ask you guys, does anyone think his, just on the football field, not even on the sideline, not the interviews, just on the football field, does anyone think he's deteriorated as a player? Because I don't. Does anyone disagree that he's clearly one of the 5 best, if not one of the 3 best, players at the position? I think we all believe that. I think part of the frustration for him is the losing to go along with, I'm not having an opportunity. That's what he said in the interview.
So what?
Right.
Stop being a crybaby. This is grown up. This is adult tackle football. Act like it. They're paying you $90 million. And you're sitting there pouting? You know something? I hope my boss sometime don't tell me the whole truth. I hope the guy, he can know. Listen, in this business, I can't tell people exactly how we feel. And Odell, it's hard to make people leaders. I don't care how much money you give them. Now, as a leader, I believe leadership is born into you, and you can become a better leader than what you are. But my biggest question is not the football. All right. Yes, he might be one of the top five, but right now, also in the NFL, he's one of the top five disruptive forces on an NFL team. That's the reason why the owner was forced, Jenna. He was forced. I've been watching this man do press conferences for years, and that's what Jenna and I see in this. Like, oh my God, he must even be more disappointed behind the scenes if that's what he said publicly.
Yeah, you look at that interview that he did with Josina, and I think the bottom line is. And you said it, you're responsible to lie. You're responsible to just not say anything, whatever the case may be. But as my dad used to tell me all the time when I was growing up, Mark, there's no right way to do something wrong. There's just no right way. You can slice it any way you want to slice it. But acting out, having a lack of emotional maturity, selling out your teammates.
At no circumstance.
That is always 100% the wrong thing to do.
I don't care if he does a tell-all book in 20 years.
Right.
There is no way. There is no way. I do not expect Warren Moon for me to be able to tell you guys the unadulterated truth about playing with Warren Moon. And I expect Warren Moon to never say the same thing about Chris Carter. All right? And there is a reason for that. Because when we sign up for the brotherhood, we're signed up for the good and for the bad. And I'm going to protect your back. I'm going to make sure that the media doesn't poke arrows in you. Why? Because we signed up to do this together. And that part of this business, Odell does not understand. So he should have never told the truth about Eli. He should allow people on shows like this to be able to speak out and say, Eli is playing awful football. And for us to sit up here and say, was he lying? That's wrong, because we wouldn't have to know anything about team sports if we adopted that theory. That is not good leadership. And that's what the ownership is more upset about than the team being 1-5. And that's more important than the team being 1-5.
Of course. Unless Odell thought that by doing that he was anointing himself the leader of the team. This is what's wrong. That's what's wrong. This is what I... In which case, he's so far from actually being a leader, then someone does need to sit down and talk to him.
Fine. The point, and I will concede the point on the interview as far as team sports goes. I think you make a compelling argument that it is not about telling the truth. That's not his job as the wide receiver for the team. It's hard to sway me off a corner. You've swayed me off the corner. But the point that I made to you earlier and that I still believe is for John Mara and for the Giants, it is actually an easier... If he had never done the interview, they're still 1-5. And then what questions is he answering?
Then he's not part of the problem. He's part of the solution. That's what he would say.
Agree.
You know something? Are you worried about Odell? No. We are very pleased with Odell. Just what he said this offseason. Remember the interview this offseason? What did he say?
Agreed. He's that Odell's doing everything right. The point I'm making is, but then the arrow's got to sling somewhere. And the guy that John Mara doesn't want to have to sling them at, if Odell had kept quiet, it's not like this was part of Odell's master plan. It's just the reality.
Listen, okay, we have to assume. This guy's run a football operation. They win championships. Behind the scenes, because this is the way you do it, Nick, I'm not happy with the coach. I'm not happy with the general manager. Just because he didn't tell us does not mean he has not addressed it. He has run a football club the way you would want to be run. And just because the owner's not saying the general manager did not do the right job in potentially the second pick, that's his job as the owner, not to tell us the truth. It's Odell's job to make sure that he reflects the ownership, the general manager, and the coach, and that's what good leadership should reflect. It should reflect what the ownership believes in, not what you personally believe. Your personal beliefs, you know something? They ain't worth crap. And don't tell us, because we don't care nothing about them, because they will not help your teammates and they will not help you win. So 1-5, yeah, you can hold that loss because you are personally responsible for some of it too.
Sting, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Much appreciate appreciated. Got to take a break.
Preach.
Coming up, a little basketball. The Warriors.
Where's the offering play?
And for a big challenge this year. KD thinks so. Yeah, I read that right. That's next on First Things First. The MLB postseason continues today with Game 5 of the NLCS. Manny Machado and the Dodgers look to take the series lead on Christian Yelich and the Brewers. Coverage begins at 4 Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app.
Good opportunity for Clayton Kershaw to make up for what was a disastrous performance in Game 1 of this series. They get the game in extras last night. It was on when we got to the office this morning.
I mean, honestly.
13 innings. If within 24 hours they can go from potentially being down 3-1 to up 3-2, huge
man,
game.
Kershaw can do a lot of good for his overall career with a good showing, another good showing in the postseason. Because Postseason and regular season, two different people.
Absolutely right.
And Manny Machado could do a lot of things for his career, but
everyone's on Manny Machado. Keep your foot off the base, man.
I knew you would disagree.
Keep your foot off the base.
I knew you and I would
disagree. That's my base. If your foot's in there, you might get kicked.
Don't ask Christian Yelich about it. We'll get to Kevin Durant in a minute, but first, Sixers Celtics. Jaylen Brown attacks the rim. Joel Embiid meets him at the rim. Oh. Brown muscles and
how rude of Jaylen Brown to go through Embiid's hands there. I mean, his hands just blocking the rim.
Excuse me, sir. It's hard for me to get to the rim.
Great effort by both of them. Jaylen attacking the bucket and Joel Embiid. Not one hand, but two hands. And didn't foul him. Got a little lucky with the bounce, though.
Happier play for Embiid. This time he blocks Jaylen Brown.
Get some of that, too.
Alters the second shot.
And now let's run the court.
Gets it on the fast break. Drops a dime.
Reward the big man.
Oh! Down.
Shaq. Now, this was LSU Shaq, Orlando Shaq.
Not Laker Shaq.
No, because on the way, when they traded him and everything, Shaq ate like a small human being or something.
and then he ate that human's twin brother before he got to Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he ate that human's mama before he got to Phoenix.
Just so I'm clear, he's eating three people already.
Oh, and then when he was in Boston, he ate Red Auerbach.
Don't forget the Cavs.
What is happening? Warriors and Thunder, Steph Curry leading the break, shakes Raymond Felton before getting to the rim. How good is Steph Curry?
Oh, he's amazing. We talk about the three-point shooting, but it's back to the basics with Steph, one of the best finishers we have in the NBA. Starting the season where he's healthy. Last season he had those knee issues. Look for that to be back. Really special at the goal, Nick.
Listen, Steph Curry's unanimous MVP season, he finished at the rim at a higher percentage than LeBron James. He is, not just given his size, given anybody's size, one of the best at-the-rim finishers in basketball.
Yeah, that combination, three-pointer and at-the-rim.
Makes him deadly.
Sticking with the Warriors hosting the Thunder, they got their championship rings for the third title in 4 years, and then they proceeded to pick up where they left off. Steph Curry with 32, KD right there, 27, in the 108-100 win. After the game, Kevin Durant emphasized this year will not be easy.
Every game is not going to be a 140-99 shootout for us. I mean, we're a team that can do pretty much play tough, play physical, hard-nosed, close game, East Coast-type basketball, and we play West Coast style. So, you know, it's going to be more games like that this season, especially with teams trying to, you know, starting to catch up with what we do a little bit and starting to know more of our scheme. So, you know, I think tonight was one of those nights that, you know, you're going to have to appreciate those type of games from us because it's going to happen more times than not.
Nick, you buying what Durant said there, or will the tune change a little bit as the season gets underway?
I'm not buying it. I understand his point. They 2 years of film on them, so people might have a better idea of what some of their sets are, but no, I'm not buying it. Last night, Klay Thompson was 5 of 20. Draymond Green made one shot, and they were in control of this basketball game throughout. The Thunder's biggest lead was 3 points. Now, they were able to, at different times, get it close, and with a couple minutes left, it looked like the Thunder might be able to steal it, even without Russell Westbrook. But if this team is fully engaged, as they should be, this team could win 75 games. I say that in all seriousness. Go ahead, C.
Jenna, I agree with them, and I agree with you. That this is real. There's a reason why teams have not three-peated in sports very, very often. A lot of it has to do with being very, very familiar. The great teams and the legacy teams, the dynasty teams, you're able to know what they're going to do, and they could still execute at a high level. But there's a reason why more teams have repeated than have three-peated. And because to keep that legacy going year after year and realize that they have a dynamic personality, a dynamic player going to be added. We don't know how he's going to react to that. So how does Draymond and DeMarcus play together? Like, we don't – at some point in the season, they're going to have to make an adjustment to his personality and his skill level to the game. So I think Kevin Durant is right. I think teams in the NBA, because of the adjustment and understanding their sets, understanding what they're trying to do, understanding the principles more, the teams, yes, they're more familiar with them, so they should be better when they face them.
I disagree with the idea that all of a sudden the three-peat in the NBA is a rarity. Let's look at the history of it. Most of the teams that have gone back-to-back have either been right there or they have three-peated. The Bulls went back-to-back and obviously three-peated both times. The Lakers with Shaq and Kobe three-peated. The Heat, didn't. The Heat were close, but what happened? They did, A, they didn't add anyone, and B, their guys got old. Why didn't the Pistons three-peat? Because they ran into Jordan's Bulls, but the Lakers in the 80s did it. Like, I don't think it's when you're this great and when your team's not getting, it's not over the hill, it's not difficult to three-peat in the league in that context.
Is the disparity between the Warriors and the rest of the league different this year than it has been the last 2 years?
We don't know what it's going to be because they don't have one of their players. If everyone was playing right now, we'd be able to make an evaluation. This is what I do know is true. And this is 100% fact. It can't be disputed. It's important for an athlete to create something in his mind that even it might not be true to the outside world. But what they're doing and what Kevin Durant did in that press conference is what you're supposed to do as a superstar. Because the reality is, what's his reality? And his reality is more important than what our reality is. So in NBA locker rooms, this is what players do. This is what great players do to challenge themselves. I believe it's physically impossible for them to win 75 games. To be able to concentrate and to be on every night like that, I believe that to be impossible, and especially with one of their key guys not playing for we don't know how much into the season.
Well, listen, I agree with you that if Durant is just creating mental games with himself, trying to be a leader as far as let the team know, hey, it's not going to be easy, guys. We're going to have dogfights. They didn't even have Russ and it was a dogfight. I got no problem with that. But like you were saying in the OBJ conversation, it's our job then on TV to say the truth of the matter. And the truth of the matter to me is I don't think they're going to be in a lot of dogfights this year. But on the 75 games point, see, if they won 73 without Durant, and if they give it the effort they gave that 73,
they had a better bench. They hadn't done it before. So it's hard. They knew that year also, they didn't win a championship. So it's hard for them to use winning more games as a catalyst to do something greater. Hey, we won twice and we didn't have to win that many games. So telling us that we have to do it with that component being removed, I believe it to be impossible.
I'm not saying that should be their goal to win 75 games. The point I'm making is this team has the talent that to me would not, it's not an outrageous statement. When Boogie comes back, their least decorated starter is a guy who scored 37 points in a quarter.
So how many games are you going to play?
What, Boogie?
30? You're going to play 30 games?
I would say Boogie.
They're going to go 30-0?
What? No, but I don't.
Because that's what it would take before them to be able to get there, because they win 75 games.
I think this team, the Warriors will play. They will not be underdogs. But one game they play all year long, assuming they don't rest guys.
Well, we know every team's going to rest guys, so we can't put some equation out there and them say, oh, they're not going to rest anymore.
No, of course. I understand that. But they don't have to. The point I'm making is they are the one team that going into the year knows that when we are full strength, we will be favored over everyone all year long. I'm just curious. How many games do you think that is a fair number for the Warriors? Houston won 65 last year, right?
Yeah, I think 63 games. 60 to 63 games last year. The Houston, it was important to have home court advantage. They did have something to prove, and they did have a special season. We can't act like teams just win 65 games just every year. No, that was a special season for them, and one injury stopped that season from being really special.
Maybe I'm holding them too high of a standard. When I see a team
I just know reality-wise, the environment that they're in, it's not going to force that out of them. If they had to, say this was the last year they were all going to play together and they want to do something collectively together, that might be a realistic goal. But from an ownership, from a what's important, it's not. So I just believe it's totally unrealistic.
Plus, what you said is true. They've done it already. They've gone and won without having to kill themselves for 82 straight
games.
And
what did that get them? Did you get a T-shirt for that? You get a wristband or something for that? What happened to them?
Got to take a break. Coming up.
Oh, okay.
Can Josh Gordon make the Patriots' offense unstoppable? Josh Gordon. That's next on First Things First. Gordon Hayward made his return to the court for the Celtics. He had 10 points, 5 rebounds, and 25 minutes of play. Said it was thrilling to be back out there on the court. Nick, how big of a contribution can Hayward make this season?
Listen, Hayward is an excellent player. My man Chris Carter, I don't even know if he knows this, caught some flack on the internet about a month ago for calling him a great role player. That doesn't mean he's not an all-star caliber player. In the East, he certainly isn't. He made an all-star team in the West.
Yes.
But on this Celtics team, his role is going to be, for them to be their best, their third best guy, their third option. And so I think that what is what his role should be, and I think he will fit into it very well.
And it's actually a compliment. I believe that he has great skill. He also has the advantage of he's played in Brad Stevens' system longer than anyone. So how he should be able to fit in, he should be able to fit in better because he has knowledge of it, and, man, he has no weakness in his game. Great defender, good perimeter shooter, can go from range, can go off the bounce. Wow. Yes, that's the reason why I said that. It's going to be exciting to see how he evolves with these young players.
See, I'll defend Chris against the internet, but him and me, man, I'm going to get you for the
setup
end of the show.
Is real, real weak.
I don't need a good setup. I'm like,
all right, back to the NFL.
That drunken tiger setup.
Episode
John Gruden don't need a plan.
John Gruden says things. In this episode, the Raiders head coach had some interesting comments about how, quote, we aren't tanking in anything, and how he does actually like rookie players, despite what America seems to think his words. The topper here, Gruden said about Derek Carr, if he doesn't play well, I've failed. CeCe, can Gruden and Carr turn the Raiders around?
Man, he's got to. I expect him to. My expectations of Oakland and John Gruden maybe aren't as high, because I've just seen some things from a football standpoint. I don't think he's a quarterback whisperer. I've got question marks as far as his overall offense, his overall play calling, how effective it can be in this new NFL. So I believe there's a tremendous learning curve from calling games in a booth. I called 2 games this year, to coaching and running an organization where you are making all the decisions from a football standpoint. I deem them things to be very, very different. I do believe John is a good learner, and there's a lot he's going to have to learn to catch up to where the NFL is today.
If he wants us to judge him based on the progression of his quarterback, then right now, record aside, he gets an F. Who has the most turnovers of any quarterback in football this year? Derek Carr. That's despite Derek Carr throwing shorter passes than any quarterback this year. So the most dinks and dunks to go along with the most turnovers, those should never go together. Yeah. I think Gruden, whatever he's saying publicly, believes they are drafting a quarterback this upcoming year with what might be the number one pick of the draft, because this might be the worst team in the NFL.
All right, we'll end with college football. Ohio State defensive end Nick Bosa has withdrawn from school in order to focus on his surgery rehab and to focus on the 2019 NFL draft. See, were you surprised by this? What was your reaction?
I wasn't surprised. I know he's got a significant injury, especially to what type of injury it is. I believe it's a sports hernia that can be ripped. It can be re-aggravated and have to have another procedure on it. Because really the question for him was, could he get back to play in the college football playoff? And to me, to take that chance with the potential him being the first pick in the draft, he's going to be a 1 through a 5 pick. So the question is, it's really a $30 million question. Do I risk playing in the college football playoff? Do I risk in trying to re-aggravate that injury? Or do I start the evaluation process for pro football? And this is what we have in Nick Bosa. We got 30 games of college tape. We also have a high school career that was impeccable. He played for the high school team that has 15 players playing in the NFL. So he went to the best high school program in the country. He trained with guys who end up playing in the NFL. His family moved from Miami Springs to live in Fort Lauderdale so he could go to that high school with him and his brother. His parents had tremendous questions about would they develop to be the type of players they are. His parents have made the right decision all along the way. I have seen them. They have taken the tough route in high school. They weren't guaranteed a position. When they went to Ohio State, they weren't guaranteed a position. So I have seen them do it the hard way and do it the right way. This is the right decision for him. It's in his best interest of his body and his career as far as moving forward.
When Chris says $30 million decision, number one pick of last year's draft, Baker Mayfield, $32 million guaranteed. You fall to 11, Minkah Fitzpatrick, half it. $16 million guaranteed. You fall to 21, it's 11. At 31, it's 9. So even if, okay, because of his overall overwhelming talent, if he re-injures himself, he goes from potential number one pick to the 15th pick. Okay, that's $18 million about thrown out the window. Even if he has a monster second contract, that's money you never get back. Now, I read the interview from Nicky Bosa's dad where he said this is not about the NFL draft as much as it is. The quote he had is, yeah, he'd be ready to go in December if he was a car salesman. But as a pass rusher, he's not going to be ready to go until well after the college football playoff has begun. So it is not about him just preparing for the NFL draft. It's about he's not going to be fully healthy. But if it were just about him preparing for the NFL draft, I would not criticize it. And I think for college players that are in their final year, that if they feel they have done enough to prove themselves in their job interview process, which is in one aspect what college football can be, and that there is no more for them to learn, or what they can learn is too big of a risk given the injury possibilities of playing tackle football, I have no problem if guys walk away. Ed Oliver's not hurt. He's a consensus top five pick, University of Houston. I want him to do what he thinks best for him and best for his family. But if tomorrow we found out Ed Oliver was saying, guys, I'm gonna give my scholarship back the rest of the year. I'll pay my own way in school if I want to go to school. But otherwise, I'm going to prepare for my career. I wouldn't criticize it. Football's too dangerous. There's too much generational wealth on the line for families. Now, Nick is a different story in that his family has some money from his brother, from his family ahead of time. But
it's not a different story. You shouldn't look at him any different. That's his brother's money.
Right.
What makes you think that? No.
That's the point I was going
to
get
to. No, maybe the difference of experience, but you can't equate his brother's money. That's like saying because Josh Rosen came from a family that's successful, oh, he shouldn't hold out for extra shit. No, he shouldn't. That's all Nicky's money. Nicky should get what he deserves. He gave us 30 games in college football, and it was fairly clear that he was dominant, if not the best player in college football. And if that's not enough to evaluate him, man, we take all kind of chances on players with less careers who have done nothing, didn't play at the level that he's at. And he has played at this level since I met him. And, man, there is no easy road for the Boza boys. You're talking about lifting weights. You're talking about playing football. They love the ugly parts of playing football. And that's the hard work behind the scenes, and that's also the film work. That's how they become great players.
How long you known Nick Bosa?
I've known Nick Bosa since he was about 8 years old. Okay. I went to college with his mom. His dad was a former first-round pick for the Miami Dolphins, so I've been friends with his dad for a long, long time. So I have a unique relationship where I coached the boys, met the boys, and was involved in the process when they decided where they wanted to go to high school at before they decided they wanted to go to college. Because I was telling Bosa, I thought they'd be pretty devastating going to Alabama with Nick Saban, but their mom won out and sent them to Ohio State because she's an alumni of Ohio State.
And
that's kind of partially true.
Speak real quick on Alabama. If any team's going to beat Alabama this year, I thought Ohio State might have the best chance. This isn't Nick Bosa's responsibility, but this really hurts their ability to win the championship this year. Alabama's probably going to win it anyway, but he's their best player, and now they're going to be without him.
Are you happy, Nick? Now you're not going to beat Alabama. There you go. Let's move on to Patriots wide receiver Josh Gordon. After a few weeks under Bill Belichick, he started to make contribution, catching 5 passes for 42 yards Sunday against the Chiefs. Belichick said Gordon's role in the offense is expanding weekly. CeCe, how should we expect Gordon's role to get bigger as the season moves on within Belichick's offense?
Well, Belichick told us something right there. He normally doesn't. If you asked him, hey, what's Edelman going to do this week? He said, we're gonna put the best players out there, going to put a play out there. I don't know, but he lets you know. Josh, every week. So, obviously, the thing with Belichick is, if I give you an assignment, I want you to master that assignment. And then your chances of getting an increased role, they get better. And that's the way it is with Belichick. He's on a merit system. Like, you earn the amount of playing time you're going to get. And, obviously, Josh is doing well day to day in the meetings. He's thriving in their system. So you can expect his role to increase. And to me, the more he learns in the system, the more the game becomes easy to him because you cannot double cover him. You cannot roll coverage to him. You cannot sit there and play zone because Tom Brady will pick you apart. So most of the time, Josh Gordon is going to have individual coverage, single, and a guy in bump and run. And he is too big, too strong, and too fast for you to tell him what you're getting ready to do. Because you can't play. Why can't you play zone? Because Tom Brady will pick you apart. He will run routes in front of you all day. Or he'll run double moves to bring you up and then go past you. So You have to be able to vary the coverage, and you have to be able to play some zone cover two where the corner is going to jam him and the safety is going to come over top to
him. Tell the audience why they can't double him. You just kind of said it in passing. You're like, you can't double him. You explained why they can't play zone. Why can't in the Patriots offense?
Rob Gronkowski is the number one wide receiver, and they're trying to take him out. And when they try to not take him out, they try to double him, and they double Edelman. Now, there was a play in the goal line where that Kansas City doubled three players. It's very, very rare. They doubled James White coming out of the backfield. They doubled Edelman and Gronk. So I'm just going, if Josh Gordon is just a shell of himself, he should be successful because what they're asking him to do is very easy. And for his skill set, as far as getting off the bump and run, that's what he's able to do at a high level.
See, what percentage of interceptions is on the receiver, not the quarterback?
60%.
60%. It's a sliding scale, depending on when you ask, Chris. Sometimes it's 50.
Sometimes 60%.
60%, something like that. And so we talk about with interceptions, you can apply something similar to incompletions. In the game against the Chiefs, Brady targeted Gordon twice. It went incomplete. It felt to me like both of those were on Josh. That Brady wasn't inaccurate with his pass. That Josh was not where Brady thought he was going to be. The one that comes to my mind's eye was up the far sideline. Josh kept going. It seemed like clear Brady expected him to run a stop. And then in the end zone, there was an incompletion where Brady thought he was going to sit in the zone, and he kept going across instead of sitting in the soft part of the zone. That, instead of being a touchdown, they ended up settling for a field goal there. I bring those points up for this reason. If that stuff gets cleaned up, this is, as long as Josh stays healthy, an all-pro addition. If that stuff gets cleaned up, then all of a sudden the Patriots have found a way to add a real difference maker mid-season and gave up almost nothing. Gave up a fifth, seventh-round pick swap. Like,
yeah, I have to temper the expectations because saying he's an all-pro, even if he was in an offense that was going to target him 10 times, we couldn't say that he's going to be all-pro. We don't know if he has the overall endurance. We don't know if he has the ability to be able to concentrate in those pressure settings. We don't know if they put the game plan in and feature him, how he responds to that, all right? So we can't say it's a great addition, but we can't put as far as being a premier player, and is he that player ever again? He's a guy who's got a lot of talent, who's in a great situation, and I'm not going to make any more of that.
The biggest encouraging number for Josh Gordon as in his increased role is his first game he played 18 snaps. His second game he played 18 snaps. Sunday night against the Chiefs, he played 63 snaps. I mean, Gronk only played 77, Edelman 71. So you are seeing him becoming more of a full-time player with them.
Yeah, and Jenna, as you pointed out, they had extra time. So that's why you saw 18-18. You saw it bump up to 63 because they had played on the previous Thursday night.
So they had
extra time, had huge advantage. That's why we saw Josh also more Sunday night.
All right, let's take a break from that. Coming up, is it time for the Giants to move on from Eli Manning? That's next on First and First. Thursday night football returns tomorrow as Von Miller and the Broncos battle Josh Rosen and the Cardinals. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. Thursday's got much better this football season.
Broncos going to get to see the guy they should have drafted, number 5, Josh Rosen, while he goes and beats them. Just a prediction. Just letting America know.
I don't know. Case Keenum is prime for a breakout game.
That's all I was trying to set up.
Look who's here. Eric Mangini. What's up, coach?
It's good to be here. A lot of energy.
Prediction. Since you're in the prediction business, guarantee what he's going to say is going to be way different what you're going to say.
I'm glad you said different. I thought you were going to say smarter than what I was going to say.
Well, we folded it in.
You kind of fold in your ear.
One of my siblings.
That's just what you were doing. The Giants have quickly let the season slip through their fingers, and the finger pointing seems to be directed at Eli Manning. The Giants are 1-5, and Eli has been not great. 19th in passer rating, 23rd in yards per attempt, only 6 touchdowns in 6 games. Not great. Now there are reports he's starting to lose the locker room. Reports that teammate Sterling Shepard was quick to refute.
Yeah, I have total faith in Eli. I haven't heard that once in this locker room. Haven't heard that from an individual player. So That's just outside noise and stuff trying to break us apart. We're doing a good job of keeping everything together in here as far as in the locker room. But we have total faith in him. We picked him as our starting quarterback as, at the beginning of the season, and we're going to ride with that.
Memo to Odell Beckham Jr.
Somebody put a C on his jersey.
That would have been the thing that would have been better to say than what you did say to Josina. Coach, are the Giants right to continue to have faith in Eli Manning?
Yeah, yeah. And lose the locker room. Whoever's saying that, whoever's pushing that forward, the locker room needs to look at themselves. There's a lot of areas where the Giants can improve, whether it's sacks allowed, the amount of sacks they have, points allowed, production by their key expensive free agents, high draft picks, the amount of times they rush per game. They're the lowest in the league in rushes per game. I think they're at 19. So we could go there. They have a head coach who got the job because he's an offensive coordinator. Your pick. Yeah. So I know we want to go with Eli, and he's always the issue. And, okay, let's say we move on from Eli. Who are we putting in, the kid from Monmouth or the kid from Richmond? which one are we going with?
Right. They're ready to be the quarterback of the New York football Giants.
That's going to take us to the promised land. So I couldn't have been happier with the comments that the owner made yesterday to Odell about maybe you need to work on production on the field as opposed to the interviews that you do off the field. And coming from the owner, that's that much more meaningful because it sends a message across the board that that's not going to be tolerated because it doesn't help anybody.
I just believe that, and Coach, tell me, I believe the owner spoke to the general manager. I believe the owner has spoken to the head coach. And I believe that them blundering the pick of Davis Webb and him not being on the roster, like those kind of things are brought up. But you know what they're going to do, gentlemen, with their family business? We're going to keep it in-house. All right? Now, if someone lets the business out of the house, Coach, then the owner would have to address it. But to think that the owner hadn't talked to the general manager and the coach and let them know that this is not what we're paying you to do, those kind of things go on a regular basis. Do you believe those type of things happen? Or do you believe that he just decided that he's going to blame everything on Odell publicly?
No, you have regular conversations with the owner, and those conversations tend to pick up if things aren't going as planned because he wants to understand what are you tangibly going to do to make this better? Most owners, they may emotionally react to things, but then they're businessmen, and they want to know, okay, here's where we are. What is your plan to make this a better situation? What are you collectively going to do to improve the situation, whether it's offensively, defensively, on special teams? And as a head coach or a GM, it is your responsibility to give them action items that you're putting in place that the players can grasp onto that can move things forward.
Coach, a really smart man once told me that your quarterback, when he's paid like a franchise quarterback, needs to be, what was the term? A force multiplier. Now, I can't quite remember what smart man told me that, but I think he looks a lot like you. Eli Manning this year, has he been a force multiplier for them?
No. There's no one arguing that.
Okay. Right now, if we're ranking reasons why the Giants are 1-5, I would say the offensive line is the first reason. Quarterback play is the second reason. The defensive, the overall lack of defensive production of big plays, I would say, is the third reason.
Yeah, but Odell didn't mention those things. He mentioned the quarterback.
Hold on.
If he had mentioned the offensive line, all right? Because we can beat around the bush while we're talking about this. Like, but this is about Odell and what he said about the captain of the team who happens to be not playing like a franchise quarterback. All right? That's the reason why we're here.
Sure, but the question was, like, are the Giants right to continue to have faith in Eli Manning? Coach said yes. I think the answer is no. That's what I'm answering. Like, is Eli Manning part of the solution to the problems of the Giants? In 2018, no. Does that change his status as an all-time Giant great? Of course not.
Who are they going to put in there to give him a better chance to win?
Look, we also talk about, in terms of force multiplier, and you look at the New England model, is understanding what people do well. And it's not like Eli's skill set snuck up on anybody. He's had a lot of success doing things a certain way. And having a running game that's effective is part of that program. Being able to run passes off of play action is part of that program. And you need to also cater the things that you do to help the person who's in that position be as successful as possible and maximize their skill set. When you're at 19 carries a game collectively and you've got the number two overall pick at running back, that to me doesn't seem to make very much sense.
So when you say the owner talks to the general manager who talks to the head coach and say, what's the plan? Put the plan in action. Where does that start? I mean, where do you first look? Do you look to your quarterback? Are you looking at – because the only thing that we really heard that stood out, John Mara said, is I need Odell to stop talking, which means that was for – that was something reporters were asking him. That was the first thing on his mind. That was something he wanted to make sure he addressed. What's the plan and where does that start?
Yeah, well, that obviously had to be squashed, and doing it from the top down is a great way to do it because he's the one guy that could find Odell in a record-setting way or sit Odell and nobody could
stop
do anything
him.
About right. it and that's completely his right. So look at the Cowboys. The Cowboys have been struggling offensively, but to their credit, they did more move the pocket plays. They had more quarterback design runs. They did some other things offensively to help them. They ran the ball more consistently. So that they had there was a plan. They put the plan in place. Whether or not it's sustainable, we'll have to see, and they're going to have to adjust that. But I give them credit for looking at where they were and saying, okay, we're going to try something different.
Right.
And now what are the Giants going to do differently than what they've done before besides play better? Okay, that's the common thing. We need to play better. I get that. But what else are you going to try to allow those guys to play better?
What they have to try to do is support the quarterback for the season. They decided before the season started with this pick, all right, we're going to go with the running back because they believed he was the best player in the draft. It wasn't about a quarterback. They thought he was the best, going to be the best pro. That's why they went with Barkley. So now they decided we're going to support Eli. That's by supporting him by getting a left tackle, by trying to come up with a running game. But coach is talking about from a creative standpoint, they have not helped Eli. So the offensive line and the lack of a running, consistent running game, it doesn't allow Eli to play at his best this year. So there's a number of problems. But we have to address the Odell thing because I had Tom Coughlin here, and he is legendary as a disciplinarian. I end up firing him, and one of the reasons was the kid with the hair. All right, we end up hiring the offensive coordinator because I thought it might be best for this offense moving forward. We end up firing him. Why? Because of lack of discipline with the kid with the gold.
McAdoo firings on Odell now? He was injured last year.
It was part of it, Nick. It was part of you couldn't control him. You don't think that was part of it?
Ben McAdoo being fired? Ben McAdoo, when he had Odell.
Okay, you assume that then. You go by that assumption that his inability, because I can guarantee you, if he could get Odell the ball and him and Odell had a great relationship and Odell was growing, that would have been part of, we got to keep McAdoo. Why? Because the kid goes with McAdoo.
Sure, but my point is that he didn't have a chance to show it because the year he got fired, Odell missed almost the whole year with injury. The Coughlin thing I can give you. But how are we going to, we're going to blame Ben McAdoo's firing on Odell? Like
Nick,
that's
I'm not
unfair.
Blaming anyone. I'm just telling you what's real. All right? If you can control the guy in the organization, they're going to keep you around. There's a reason why they drafted Randy Moss. You know the reason why? Me. And I'm in that building. And they knew they could trust me to be able to handle him. There's a reason why they fired Tom Coughlin. It wasn't all to do with Odell, but that was one of the parts.
Sure.
When back McAdoo, his inability to put a game plan together, his inability to be able to manage a team. And I got a star. How are you with the star? Not great. So you think that was a positive? No, that's the reality of being in the NFL, and that was McAdoo's fate because of him. And Tom Coughlin, part of that was because of him. Those are our reality, regardless of what we want to believe.
And they went the shutdown Eli route last year. That didn't work out real well.
Yeah,
there is no plan for this year.
So that's what I was going to say. Let's get back to it. What is the solution with Eli? They're going to ride him out the rest of the season.
When Davis Webb didn't make the team, that was also a failure on the front office, not having that high-quality draft pick. He should have been a better player and should be on the roster right now.
Well, if things go the way they are going, they'll have an exact same chance to do exactly what they should have probably done last year. Coach, stick around. Coming up, should the Steelers be worried? Lev Bell still hasn't shown up yet. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini. Week 7 kicks off tomorrow night on Fox. And the last time I checked, Le'Veon Bell has still not shown up for work with the Pittsburgh Steelers. There were reports he'd be joining the team this week while they're on the bye. But now reports are that Week 8 is the new target. And despite all of this, Ben Roethlisberger says he's not concerned.
I had no preconceived notions. I didn't think or know if he was coming. I just showed up, and, you know, they were messing with his locker. They put, like, a to-go lunch on his chair, like he was there and stuff. So I don't think anybody really knows, and I honestly were not – if you guys wouldn't – and I don't mean just you guys, but if the media or people wouldn't talk about it, we wouldn't even be thinking about it, truthfully.
What do you think, Coach? Should the Steelers be concerned that he hasn't shown up yet?
Well, at this point, Ben makes a valid point. They've operated so long without him, and there's been so much, is he coming this week? Is he coming that week? It just gets old. Like, they're worried about taking care of their injuries. They're worried about the next opponent. They, life has moved on, so they've got to a functioning level. In terms of when he is going to show up or not going to show up, ideally, it's as soon as possible. And I had a much harder stance until I went back and looked at his numbers last year. And look, the guy touched the ball 400 times last year for the Steelers. So at this point, we know he's done after the season. We know it's probably going to be an 8-game or 6-game, you know, depending on what it is, relationship. What can he do as a coaching staff to try to maximize his contribution, knowing that it's going to be a very limited window? The frustrating thing is he going to come in and potentially get one of those hamstrings that are hard to diagnose, or what guy are you going to get when he comes in? That to me would be my bigger concern than when he actually comes in. It's what's our plan when he comes in, and what are we really getting when he does come back?
I was talking to Andrew Filipponi in Pittsburgh yesterday, who's been on this story and covered it as well as anybody in the local media. And he raised to me what I thought was a really interesting question that I had not even considered, which is, at this point, why would he show up at all? And the answer most of us have is, well, you got to show up by week 10 or else the contract year doesn't toll. But the point he made that made me think about it. So he's not under contract. It's not like a Dwayne Brown situation last year with the Texans, where if he never shows up, then the contract he doesn't like just rolls over to the next year. He's not a player that's waiting to hit to where he can be a true free agent. He's been in the league long enough. All that not showing up means is Pittsburgh could do this again. They could franchise him next year, and it would still just be the second franchise tag. But does anyone here think Pittsburgh wants to go through this again? That Pittsburgh next year wants $14.5 million of their cap to be dedicated to him, to let him run them through this whole rigmarole again? Like, I now believe it's possible he doesn't have no Week 10 deadline. He has no deadline. That he might sit out the entire season, dare Pittsburgh to franchise him again. I think organizationally, they would be hard-pressed to do that. And then he hits true free agency, which is what he has wanted to do the entire time. Like, we've imposed this Week 10 deadline because in the past, that's about a guy under contract, like when it was Cam Chancellor, when he held out for a couple games. When Earl Thomas, we thought he might hold out, because if you don't show up by Week 10, the contract rolls over. With Le'Veon Bell, it's a different situation. I think it's possible he never shows up.
I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted talking about him. I'm exhausted talking about this contract. I'm going to try to. I got a job to do, but I'm going to try to talk about the players who want to play and the players who are there, all right, and not talk about the players. I don't know what he's going to do. I've never seen a situation like this, and there is going to be a conflict when he shows up, you know, because his commitment to playing football and the commitment that we typically make to each other, he can't stay true to form in holding out and then show up on that day and say, I'm signing up for what everyone else is signing up for. And if you were signed up for what everyone else is signed up for, you would have been here. I do understand the 400 carries. I do understand every person is in business for himself. But you have established a brotherhood. You're not a new guy coming into the league. It's not like we got you from some other league and you don't have existing relationships. Like, I understand that. But those relationships, they do mean something. And I would have told some of those guys who their careers and their livelihoods were depending on one of their best player being there, I would have told them, and they would know. The public might not know, but the guys who I had played with and made a commitment to, they would know what I was going to do. So he's got me to the point, Jenna, like you. I'm exhausted. Don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what his next move is going to. Maybe he's playing chess, and I've just been playing checkers for the last 35
years. Just to respond to your point, Nick, if he doesn't show up at all and the Steelers have the right, you're still betting that the Steelers won't make that option or won't exercise that option, I would imagine they'd exercise that option out of principle. To you want to do this to us, and this is where...
That's a bit of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yes, yeah. But
I'm going to tell you something. But I'm not going to do you any favors.
Right, and
if you're the Steelers.
Organizationally, we talked about this with other players. You have to stand for something, and you've got to draw a line in the sand at some point and say that you're not going to do this to us. You don't do this to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And does he really want to take that chance? Now, if he does come back, there are going to be issues with the people that he had long-term relationships with, friendships with, whose everybody's life depends on this, and. You got to make the best out of a bad situation and look at him as, all right, this is a hired gun that maybe we can get something out of that can help us where we want to get to, but it's never going to be the same from a relationship standpoint.
I just want to ask you real quick, because you mentioned the soft tissue injuries potential, like a hamstring injury. We've seen guys who just missed training camp are more susceptible, we know the numbers, to one of those soft tissue injuries. He's now missed training camp first half of the season. If he suffers one of those injuries, do you think guys in the locker room are going to question, going to doubt? Can you play through it? Like, how bad is this really? If it's a broken bone, it's one thing. But one of those injuries that's about how you feel, whether or not something tightens up on you on game day, is that something he's going to have to deal with if he shows up?
Yeah, well, of course. Everybody's going to look at it. And it puts everybody in such a bad spot. Someone's going to lose their job when he shows up. Someone who's on that roster right now is going to get cut and has to go home. That's going to affect someone's life. And then you're going to come back, and if he decides not to practice, that puts more reps on other guys because you lost the player that you cut. If he decides late in the week not to play, all that preparation that could have gone to another back, that affects guys. The general distraction of him being there and everybody guessing whether his injury is real or not real, that's it's a different type of Odell Beckham distraction, but it's a distraction, and it takes away from what they're trying to do, which is win a Super Bowl with a collection of talent that they can't keep together that much longer.
We should mention that James Conner, who's been playing because Lev Bell is out, actually has more yards this year than L. Bell did last year through six games.
And James Conner's been excellent through the first six games.
He's really stepped up. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.